The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Well, I've been doing the show for 10 years. Every now and then, I like to spice it up and do something different. So a couple weeks back, I called up a local startup incubator by the name of 1776. Everyone knows where that's at, 15th Street, where the Washington Post used to be. I said, hey, give me three good companies. And so, and they said, okay. We got a guy named Avery, we got a guy named Joel, a guy named Chris. Have them come down. And I said, well, it'd be nice to take and look at three different perspectives on technology in the Washington, D.C. area and just see how a startup would look at this technology and see how it would help my listeners. And so that's what we have in today. We have a startup that's involved in drones. We have a startup that's involved in cybersecurity and a startup that's involved in a lot of software development topics. So what we're going to do is we're going to bounce around between the three companies. We have Avery Brown, who's the director of business development from Drone Airspace Management. We have Chris Bach, Chief Operating Officer from 540, and we have Joel Bench, who's a risk evangelist. Think about that, Joel Olstein, risk evangelist from Emergent. And so I shuffled the cards, and we first one's going up. It's going to be Avery Brown, and the name of his company is just a great name for a company. It's called Drone Airspace Management. So Avery, my audience is federal IT professionals and the community here in the Washington, D.C. area. They're all looking at new ways to use different types of technology. I went to Google Trends. And what I did was I typed in drones, and the number four thing most popular was Puerto Rico. People are saying, how can drones be used to help people in disaster areas? And what about the federal government, FEMA? So there's all kinds of applications for drones, and you have this startup has a different kind of a twist on drones. It was kind of interesting. Could you tell us about your background, Avery, and your company, please?
All right. First of all, you know, I always like to plug the company. Let me give a shout out to 1776 for actually thinking we were one of those really innovative companies that they should refer to you. So we're happy to be there. What do we do? You're right. The drone space is a new technology space. We look at it as the sort of entree into the IoT. You're basically talking robotics meets sensors equals data. And drones are just another way to collect that data. And they're another way that they'll collect to the connect to the internet and provide this third wave of what we're looking at into the digital world. So what is it? It's a fun way to learn. We try to take drones, what we call it, from toys to tools. You know, people right now are doing a lot of great things flying around. You mentioned Puerto Rico. That's given a great highlight to the industry. You know, the disaster relief, but even behind that in the search and rescue piece, they're doing some wonderful things on mapping, mapping the routes that they would get there. Afterwards, mapping, how are we going to reconstruct this thing? Where's that data coming from? Well, when you're flying above, you get a great perspective on how to view that, how to collect that data, and even the insurance companies are using them to look at as a risk management tool, basically. What do the assets look like now? What are they going to look like next week? What's decaying? What's flooding? Wow, even if, you know, everybody's looking at it from FEMA to the environmental. Where's this water going?
So the challenge is, how do you get people who know how to run these drones?
Exactly. And really, we work with industry and sort of down. We like to say we're a learning platform. We're an education technology company. When we're taking you from toys to tools, we're teaching you how to fly a precision flight where you're not just playing around. You're actually doing this as a job-related skill. You're picking up a whole lot of skills from physics to math to everything on route to getting there. So it's a learning tool. But at the end of the day, it's also a workforce development tool for us. So you are learning how to fly this at a precision data collecting level. So when we do it, we take it as a fun aspect, and we work with schools and provide curriculum that and then lead you all the way up to job employers, great employers. Like we talked to Airbus Aerial. What kind of data are you guys collecting? And the problem they're having is the same thing that government's having, skills gaps. you know, everybody can fly one. You can even pass. We only have one regulation in our industry right now, which is not good for us. We actually want more to graze the quality level. If I'm an employer and I want you to fly a cell tower, you better not have just picked one up off of Amazon and say, hey, I can shoot some real great videos with my new GoPro. They're not going to let you around anything like that. We like to train you to the point where they look at you and say, all right, because you came through this program, through DAM, Drone Airspace Management, we know you're at a certain quality level. Basically, we're certifying you're at a standard that they can now pick from, creating a labor pool that is actually relevant for a job skill.
If you you Google drones, you find all kinds of fun facts. Here's a fun fact. FAA estimates by 2020, there'll be 30,000 drones in usage, creating 100,000 jobs. Hopefully, a lot of them for your school, huh?
Oh, yeah. Anybody we partner with. So we partner on two sides of the equation. Right now, we tend to work with a lot of federal government agencies. And I had to write them down because people don't know how wide this is. When you're really filling job skills gaps in a changing technology field, you're working with a little bit of everybody. So, you know, I'm an old Department of Labor person. I'll get in my background later. But we work with Department of Education, Department
really?
Of Labor. Yes.
Well,
energy.
I missed that on the challenge, you know, on a story question, you know?
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. The crossover is amazing. Even DOD, even in the military space, they have a shortage of pilots. You know, these are military pilots. But the way they're sourcing and feeding this shortage of those kind of pilots that don't just transfer from driving, flying an F-15 into flying a drone. It is a totally different experience. We work with a lot of people who've been Black Hawk helicopter pilots. They're like, I stink at flying drones. Are you kidding me? Because I'm used to being in the vehicle. This is an unmanned vehicle. Whole different concept going on there. So when they're looking for that, they reach out to government contractors. So if you're Lockheed, Raytheon, we talk to Textron. They like to have military personnel if they can because they understand the kind of environments they get put in. But they also need the skill set. And they're like, we need somebody who can look at this command and control center and understand autonomous flying and read the data that's basically on the computer. So we said, okay, look, let's work with you. We can train up those people. That's why you're talking to DOD at some point. You know, this kind of comes down. What do you guys need? And let us develop something for these schools that fits this kind of curriculum. But we love energy infrastructure, too. So things that can tie. And I'll tell you why we started out in rural America. And it's an interesting challenge taking sort of foreign ex-coal miners and people and their families and the students that are hungry for technology to learn and skilling them up to fly around something like a Wi-Fi tower.
Right. If you have to do inspection for certification of Wi-Fi towers, it's a whole lot cheaper send up a drone than send up a human, isn't it?
Exactly. Or a helicopter for power line programs. We look at their programs. Hey, you guys train power line people and utility people. Well, they know the equipment, but here's a great tool that they can now enhance that with by flying a drone and actually seeing what's up there. And it's like, oh, well, now that you don't have people falling out of towers, people didn't understand how many deaths there actually were from people falling out of things like
cell
towers.
And this is just scratching a little 1% of the mountaintop of one application here. I mean, when
exactly.
Combined with satellite and geospatial information, what a force multiplier.
Yeah, it's excellent. I mean, just as a little preview of a project we hope to put together, they're now flying the drones off of 3G and maybe later 4G networks. So you can now switch between satellite and telecom backbone, which is, you know, really, we do find our job cool too at the end of the day. But but that is something that once again leads you into that IoT world. As things are becoming interconnected to the internet and so of our lives, so will the tools.
Internet of things should be internet of toys to things.
That's right. Toys to tools. That's right.
If people are interested in your company, maybe want to work for you, where can they get more information, please, Avery?
Yeah, I almost need to defer to this one. Wait a minute. Let me get a little information. You see how much I know about details.
Drone Air. SP.com, I think, is your website, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Most definitely. And we have a Twitter handle.
At Drone Air, SPMGMT. Was out there this morning. Hashtag drone, hashtag US, hashtag mining. What are you guys doing with mining?
Mining. Mining is, you know, we're doing work in rural America right now. So mines are dying, that job in coal mining particularly. But once they're abandoned, there is a reclamation process.
Do you know the cheap way or the expensive way?
Exactly.
You know?
We're saying there is a cheap way. Even the environmental runoff, you know, seeing this and mapping it. And look at all the cool attachments you can put on it, you know, infrared and sensors and...
Jeez, I like cool stuff.
Well, yeah.
We're going to have to take a break now. We'll come back. We'll talk a different company from 1776. It's a special show today. We have three startups from 1776 talk about new technologies and how it can impact my listeners, the federal IT professionals. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We just heard from Avery Brown, Director of Business Development from a company called Drone Airspace Management. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Well, John finally does a different show. Instead of one person in the studio boring you to tears for a whole hour, I decided to call up a local startup incubator called 1776 and said, hey, give me three winners. And they come up with three winners today. So the first block, we talked about drones. And the second block here, we're going to talk about something called an API. And the name of the company is called 540. Our guest is Chris Bach. He's the chief operating officer from a company called 540. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, John.
Tell us about your background first and how you wound up working for 540.
Sure. So my background, I'm a rare quasi-DC native. We moved here when I was 8 years old, so I grew up in the area. And after school, went to work for the federal government, worked for the Department of the Navy for 5.5 years in the contracting world. And that kind of established a foundation for me in understanding how the government does business, the government procurement and contracting cycles. And then I migrated into consulting, spent a number of years with some of the larger firms here in the area. But about 3 years ago, I connected with a colleague who had started a company, had started 540, and his name is John O'Brien. He's our founder. He actually started the company as a one-person operation, and he had picked up a couple of contracts, had brought on a couple of employees, and kind of gotten to the point where he needed some help on the kind of the business side of things. And that was at least initially what I kind of brought to the table in terms of 540, and I came in and helped us put some structures in place to grow as a company. But the other thing I think from 540's perspective is our client base. We work primarily in the Department of Defense, and right now we're working primarily in what I'll call the business space. We're working with acquisition, procurement, contracting data in those organizations and helping them better manage the data that they collect from various weapon system programs, from different procurement and contracting operations, and helping them expose that data and do smart things with it.
Very humble. You many years at IBM, this little company called Coopers & Lybrand, no one's heard of that, MBA. So you have a pretty strong business background. I can understand why you're there. Now, I got to ask about the name of the 540. Now, in martial arts, there's a kick. There's a 540 kick. We all know that. So why do you name it 540?
I've never heard that one. Most people think that 540 ties to the 540 area code, which is the Shenandoah Valley. I went to school at James Madison University, and that's in the 540 area code. We actually have a ton of JMU people in our company.
So that's why, really?
No, it's not. as I mentioned, you know, my background is DOD, working with the Navy. John O'Brien, our founder, he actually started the federal piece of his career working in an organization called the Business Transformation Agency, which was a component of the Department of Defense. And 540 is actually the sum of the angles of the Pentagon.
Now that's a Jeopardy question. Who would have guessed that?
I've shared a little bit of secret sauce, but honestly, it's become a a real good conversation starter, because that's one of the I hand somebody my business card, and one of the first things they say is 540. What is that? And the reason that that's our name is, you know, even as we grow and expand and work with different organizations, our roots really are in the Pentagon, and we're really committed to supporting our national defense mission.
And listeners should know that your website's 540.co.
That's correct. 540.co.
Good, good, good. So I did some Googling on you guys this morning, stumbled on this John O'Brien character, and his Twitter handle is @FedAPI. And you scroll through his latest tweets, he talks about #APIs, #AngularJS, #Elasticsearch, #DataElasticsearch. That's blown up. I mean, you're in a good spot and a good time right now, aren't you?
Yes, definitely. And you mentioned #FedAPI. If you go to our website, one of the things that you can find there, we actually built a platform. It's built based on Elasticsearch, and it's called FedAPI. And what we're doing is we're ingesting publicly available data. Again, it's mostly procurement contract data. It's also, we have some budget data in there. And we also have one of the things that we use it as a platform to kind of show kind of the art of the possible in terms of what you can do in terms of harvesting data and then making it available via APIs. And one of the things that we've done is actually we've harvested bid protest data from the GAO. And it's actually the decision data. So when a decision on a bid protest is made, there's a document that's published that has the decision, but it's a document. It's not searchable. So we actually harvest that data and ingest it into FedAPI and then make it available.
You could maybe use it for predictive analytics sometime.
Potentially, yes, absolutely.
Very potentially.
And so we use that as a showcase for us to be able to show organizations in the federal government what the possibilities are in terms of being able to get to hard to access data and then what you can do with it. We really consider ourselves to be API evangelists. A lot of people know what APIs are and understand what the potential is, but what we're trying to do is get people to really understand the importance of using APIs, not only to I'm going to use a word that's probably scary to my colleague from a security perspective, to expose data, but to expose it in a secure way, but to expose it both internally within the organization and also externally. So you're sharing it with your partners or maybe with the public, depending on the type of data, but you're also sharing it inside your organization. So your budget and finance organization is able to get access to the data from the procurement organization and vice versa.
I went to your website, and there's all kinds of interesting words at your website. That's for sure. One phrase from your website is inject Silicon Valley into the federal government, whether they like it or not, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. if you think about the history of Silicon Valley, it really started with the government in terms of funding things. And so we take an approach of trying to take a lean forward perspective from a tech stack. Trying to leverage open source as much as we can and try and push the envelope. And that's challenging in the federal space. We realize that there are lots of barriers, bureaucratic barriers. There are and very real processes you have to go through from a security perspective to get approval to use different tools and technologies. But what we found is if you can find champions in the government that are committed to leveraging those types of technologies, making those types of changes, that you can break down those barriers and really have success in terms of getting some of those technologies implemented.
Special added bonus, if you do business with 540.co, you get sexy web and mobile apps. So that's pretty good to have, huh?
Yeah, we definitely try to focus on building things that have a modern look and feel to them. I think we're starting to see more of that in the federal government. That's a big aspect of particularly public-facing federal government applications is making them look friendly, kind of give that sort of a feel that people expect to have when they interact with Google or Amazon.
A millennial will look at a Gubby website and within a tenth of a second instantly brand it. Bang. Old, 1970s, mm-hmm. or they'll integrate. I mean, your website is very newish. I mean, I think this is the feeling of UI UX that makes people want to engage, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's I mentioned public facing, but it's also the internal facing capabilities too. You know, the federal workforce, you know, they are people that, you know, they use Amazon and Google too, and they have that expectation in terms of when they go to a, you know, a commercial website, how they're going to interact with it. And it's reasonable for them to expect to have a similar experience when they interact with the systems and websites and capabilities that they have to use on a day-to-day basis to do their jobs.
So, Chris Bach, if someone wants to get more information, what website should they visit, please? So
our website is 540.co. We do have a Twitter handle, at 540.co. And one other thing I just want to put a plug in. I mentioned APIs. There's a really strong API community here in the D.C. area. The first Tuesday of every month, there's a meetup. It happens in D.C. If you go to the meetup.com, you can find it's the DC API meetup. And we've been active participants in it for as long as I've been at 540. And it's a really good mesh of federal and non-federal people coming together, talking about APIs and what, again, what cool things people are doing.
It's the best mix in town. I just love those little groups. I encourage everybody to go to these groups because you get face-to-face is so much better than any stinking blog or book or something.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Chris. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. Our second guest was Chris Bach, Chief Operating Officer from 540. We talked about APIs. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is Scott Massioni. Follow me for the latest news critical to the defense community on Twitter at SMassioniWFED. SMAUCIONEWFED.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Kind of mixing up a little bit today. I called up a local incubator called 1776. And I said, hey, give me three good ones. And so they sent out three good ones. And so today we're talking about different types of technology, startups, how they can help my listeners, and all kinds of different topics. The first topic we talked about was drones. Then we talked a little bit about APIs. Now we're going to talk about a big fancy phrase called predictive analytics. And that's going to impress someone, but not my guest here today. Our guest today here is Joel Benj, risk evangelist from Emergent. Joel, how are you?
I'm really well, thanks. Save the last for last.
You're kind of ideally suited for this position. Tell us about your background, please.
So my background's actually in theater, education, and video games. And I accidentally, in the tech bubble through video games, got a job doing help desk and working at NASA on tech support and working in a NOC and a SOC and doing all those really cybersecurity hands-on-y things. And then I had applied at the Department of Homeland Security for what I thought was going to be a compliance position. And the gentleman who hired me was the director of a brand new cybersecurity strategy division. And he looked at my resume and he said, you're a nerd, but you talk real good.
You talk real good for a nerd.
You've got a background in communications. You want to be a communications officer. So I did 7 years at the Department of Homeland Security.
It sounds like 7 years hard time.
Yeah, well,
I did seven years
in Homeland Security. It absolutely changed my life. What we did there was we worked with the operational and tactical office of the CISO, and then tried to communicate we didn't call it risk at the time, but tried to talk about the program. To the secretary, you take this million-dollar program and you boil it down to the three bullets, only one of which you know they'll ever see.
Yeah.
And really to communicate this. At the same time I was doing communications for internally for the department itself, I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't say it's October, it's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and it's a shared responsibility. I ran that internally for the department for 7 years and still support everything that's coming out of that program, Stop, Think, Connect.
Great.
But really it was about telling stories, and it was about how do we make this very deep technical cybersecurity, now digital risk thing real to people who don't have the time, the inclination, or really the need to fully understand it, right? So you're not a city planner or an infrastructure specialist, but when you step up to the curb to walk across the street, your head goes left. You have instincts, right? You've just developed these instincts to know this is the right decision to make at the time. And that is the level of awareness that we want executives, CEOs, boards of directors to get to when they're dealing with these big, gigantic cyber programs. The challenge is traditional cybersecurity doesn't actually do risk. It just is a punch list. It's compliance. It's plugging holes. It's looking at individual exposures. It's kind of like a finding a needle in a haystack of what's the most important thing. And risk is dealing with an entire stack of needles. And you have to understand your entire risk universe, every possible thing that could go wrong, and prioritize and decide what's the most important thing. So the guy who hired me at Homeland went to work for the president. He was on the national security staff. Dr. Earl Crane, at the same time, was doing his PhD research at GW, George Washington University, in swarming artificial intelligence and trying to develop a proof of concept around self-defending networks and how can the network be self-aware, not of every individual exposure from a central location, but actually distribute that intelligence, that instinct, if you will, that nervousness across the network and let the network make decisions. DoD is looking at this, but we're not really there yet as far as commercializing it. So we stood up the company, proved that concept in the lab, and then pivoted towards digital risk management, which is taking that same concept, using real live data, and doing that for the board.
Joel, I went to your LinkedIn profile. I saw strategic communications, check. Security, check. Computer security, check. But there's one aspect of your background that you're not revealing to people here. And the real key, I think, part of background is beer enthusiast, huh?
The microbiology. This gets right back to the swarming, right? So how do these little itty-bitty, teeny-tiny, dumb organisms survive for millions and millions of years, right? How do ants survive? How does yeast propagate and survive and make beautiful things like beer, right? Like my buddy Chris Bach here. Bach's one of my favorite beers. Well, this is where you get into that swarm intelligence. It's very simple rules. The chemistry around yeast is very simple. The way ants find problems is very simple. So what we've done is we've simplified the data. We pull it in from APIs, like Chris works with, across any type of tool that's in an organization. And we look for patterns. We look for exposures across the data space to say, you know what, there's a lot of nervousness around here around this object, and if I use that to tell a story, right, so my background in education, storytelling, to tell a story around a scenario, I can put that in front of an executive and say, you know what, you're likely to have an external actor use phishing against your call center to get your credit card data, and that could cost you $5 million in reputation and legal costs. That's a much better, more compelling way to communicate risk than to say, I need to patch the server. Well, why? Well, because it's unpatched. Well, why? Well, because it's really bad patch.
So, right? So what you're doing is you're conceptualizing predictive analytics into a non-mathematical formula, something someone would react with. Is that what you're telling the story about predictive analytics?
Yeah, and we're using the math. So the predictive analytics is the swarming algorithm that Dr. Crane developed at GW, which looks at all the stuff that could go wrong, right? It is a bunch of objects in data, right? It's a big data predictive solution. But what we do that's really cool is the system comes up with new scenarios. So right now you can only protect against something you've already seen. And so what we do is we actually think of more scenarios. And so if you give me 10 things that you're concerned about, I can turn the crank on my machine learning, machine imagination algorithm and give you another 100 that you hadn't thought of that uses the same data to say, this is a little different than what you were worried about, but it's going to be worse and bigger. Because the one thing we always learn is, you know, the stock market crash, 9/11, we look back and we go, you know, if I knew what I was looking for, I could have seen that coming in the data.
You know, I think your organization sprouted out of GW University just downtown here.
Yep.
And if you were to go to university and type in risk management, you'd get a lot of finance courses.
Finance courses.
Yeah, so, I know. Yeah. I know. But when I have your business card here in front of me, I wrote down integrated risk management. It's a different concept, isn't it?
It's a different concept. It's actually showed up first in the finance industry. So some of our very first clients were some of the biggest banks. I can say that much. You probably have their credit cards in your wallets, right? And so they're big banks. They're very risk-minded. But they didn't have the capacity to conceptualize those type of business risks from a cyber and a digital exposure. So that's what we do there. Now, the federal government is probably second behind finance in adopting this. Even the president's cyber executive order said, I will personally hold accountable any agency head that has that doesn't manage their cyber risks, right? So we've kind of had that language in the FISMA and other regulations and laws for a while, but it really hit the forefront when I will personally hold responsible, and we're seeing that show up in many, many other places. So we're actually seeing digital risk move up the stack. It's not the CISO's job to think of everything anymore, right? The CISO's job is to be first line, tactical, put in the strategy for controls. You need a risk management function, someone who works with the CISO, then at that second line function to do that linkage to the business and to say, because of what we're seeing down here in this data layer, these are the type of things that can happen and we need to make some decisions. Is it above our risk appetite? Maybe we don't care. If a hack happens and the company was operating the way the board said that they should be operating, the CISO shouldn't get fired. It should be the board, right?
If someone's listening to you, kind of interested in ants or interested in swarming or interested in predictive analytics, where could they get more information, please?
So our website is currently at endsecurity.com. Emergent Network Defense was the PhD research. We're tweeting at Emergent Risk AI, and we publish a lot of things there.
Also, one of the key phrases on your website is "see around the corner."
See around the corner.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
So I don't like to say we're predicting the future, but what we are doing is helping people just get an idea of there's more than compliance. There's more than patch and pray.
Generally speaking, if you speed on a curvy road in the mountains, you may go over the edge.
Yep.
I mean, generally speaking, you've seen it 100 times before.
If you've got reflectors and better headlights, you get a split second head warning. And for a business, that's enough.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much. You just heard an interview with Joel Benj, risk evangelist from Emergent. And for more information on him, endsecurity.com. This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk , 1500 AM. Come back and have all three together, kind of a unified show talking about innovation provided by 1776. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Well, we have a kind of crazy show today. Instead of one topic for an hour, I kind of sliced and diced it into three different topics, three different companies. I called up 1776 and I said, send me down three winners. We got three winners. We got a person who deals with drones, a person who deals with APIs, a person who deals with risk management. And now it's the free-for-all section. I'm going to go through each one of these individuals and just ask the obvious question. Anyone who's listening to this radio show is sitting and asking this obvious question. This, Avery, is the Tom Cruise question. You can hear it coming. And the Tom Cruise question is, show me the money. So if I want to do business with you, how can an agency save money? How can an organization save money?
Okay, well, we want the agencies, like I said, to look at these things as new tools. They automate and they're safety tools. So if you're in the federal government, and a lot of time they're pushing innovation. They're like, we want this adopted. We just don't know how to do it. It's almost the same thing you deal with sort of in the cyber world or in cybersecurity. There's too many products. We don't know what's going on. We're about setting a standard. So when you're dealing with us and looking at our learning, you're using this tool for an industry specific reason. It could be for infrastructure inspection. We deal with the FAA. They're looking at their buildings. They're like, we can't have people climb up there. What if there's a bald eagle up there? We don't know that. We can't even touch that. But if we have a drone go up there, we can do that. There's nobody falling out of the towers. We put a sensor on it. There's
one
no
human being. That's it. That answers the question. Human being.
What they have to use helicopters for, we can now use drones, get better data, closer data. We can put all kinds of payload. In infrared, we know what the leakage is that's coming out, the heat coming out of the building.
Right.
We can look at making that more efficient. There's a lot of just infrastructure work that can now be done by automating.
So, Chris, I went to your website, 540.co. I saw a picture of you with a guitar. And I thought of Woody Guthrie because you're too young to understand Woody Guthrie. But in 1936, Woody Guthrie wrote a song about, it's all about the do-re-mi, talking about the money. So comes to your company about the do-re-mi. So 540.co, tell me about the dough. How can you save me some dough there, buddy, or make me some dough?
Well, it's interesting. Avery talked about drones and their capability to collect data. From a federal government perspective, the government is absolutely teeming with data. There's data all over the place. Problem is the data is squirreled away in legacy systems, or it gets put into an Excel sheet. There are lots of different places where this data resides. And our kind of value proposition, to use a fancy business word or phrase, is really helping organizations unlock that data so that they can take advantage of it, make better business decisions, but also from an efficiency perspective, there's nothing more frustrating than being asked for the same data multiple times. And if that data is collected in one place and it's exposed internally in a secure way, but it's made available, nobody else needs to ask for it. And there's a tremendous amount of efficiency that goes along with doing that.
And just saves the money right there.
Absolutely.
Duplicate content. Great. Well, I predict that Joel has the next question, speaking of predictive analytics. And I'm sure I've talked to lots of people about analytics and predictive analytics for years and years and years. And I usually walk away, and it seems like it's having, I call this a pocket full of pudding. It's like, well, kind of mushy, kind of, I don't know, it's kind of, yeah, we'll kind of do this and kind of do that. But, you know, just show me the money here, Joel. Give me an example of how your product, your company, can actually save people money.
It's funny you bring up Jerry Maguire, because that actually just came up in our staff meeting yesterday where we're talking about the quant. Like, what is, you know.
That's it.
Like,
that's the question everyone wants.
What is the thing that you bring? And really, it's automation and speed, right? So anybody out there who's done a tabletop exercise, you get all the executives, all the risk guys in a room, you sit for an afternoon, and you pour over a bad day scenario, and you might get two, right? What we do is we do that, you turn the handle, and then you spit out 100 of them, right? So we actually went to bid with a client where they were looking at our system, our software platform, versus bringing in a consultant to do a risk analysis. And they told us that we actually came in 1/3 of their cost, right? And so people ask us, well, who's your competition? Our competition is consultants and Microsoft Excel, but you need hundreds of consultants and hundreds of copies of Microsoft Excel to get the speed that we've get. So we're cheaper and faster, and we run real time all the time using real data. You know, once those consultants walk out of the room, you've got shelfware, you've got a piece of paper that shows where you were last week.
So Avery, you're the drone guy in the room. You got that big fat checking account there. Would you ever consider hiring someone like Joel for your company? Does he have an application for your company?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, we have a new tool. With drones, collect data in terms of petabytes.
Wow.
Not gigabytes, but petabytes. And that massive amount of data, and you know, and if you reach out even on the governmental end or it's a commercial end, like, yeah, that's great. We got our own data. We don't know what to do with that. And now you're hitting us with petabytes. So we would go to somebody like Joel and say, hey, look, here's this data. Mine this for them. Look through this. Find something that's useful that they can get some intelligence out of and package it to them. I mean, not that we don't participate in that ourselves, but that's not. We're the collector of data. We like it to be good data. Instead of garbage in and garbage out, we like to collect it in a scientific way, so it's good data, and then have the predictive guys do what they do.
So, Chris, you share an office at 7076 with these two gentlemen. So, any partnerships in the future that you can connect up with? I mean, this drones, this is hot. This is the sexy part. I mean, your website says he's the sexy part. He's got the drone going on here. And the predictive guy is wow, that's a lot. So you're going to turn right or you're going to turn left?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we sit around and talk about drones all the time because they are.
Everyone does.
Are cool.
Yeah.
I think Avery talked about, you know, collecting petabytes of data and, you know, then doing predictive analytics things with it. But the other aspect of, you know, collecting lots of data and is making that data available for people that, you know, I mean, I know what I know, Avery knows what he knows, Joel knows what he knows, but what could John Gilroy do with that data if he had access to it? And what different things can he put together that none of us have even thought of that might help solve a problem, that might drive efficiency, that might help predict some future event? There's no telling. So there's a tremendous amount of value in that. So we're absolutely interested in, you know, we partnerships are, you know, anytime you have a startup or a small business, partnerships are a real key aspect to success. So being at 1776 in that kind of incubator type of a space has really been great for us in terms of interacting with other companies, finding people that are like-minded. Helps from a recruiting perspective. There's just a lot of upside to it. So absolutely, partnerships and working together are critical.
So, Joel, in the last Star Trek movie, there was a swarm, remember? That was a swarm. So is this going to affect here, Avery? In 5 years from now, is Avery going to have swarms of drones that can attack, swarms of drones that can be sent down to? I mean, is this a match? The match game here? Is this a match between predictive analytics and swarms and his drones?
There's a similar application. We looked at self-driving vehicles. Right, so we were looking at an opportunity with a company that is developing self-driving vehicles. You just happen to be dealing in, you know, more dimensions of space than they are. But the challenge with that is these drones are collecting so much data, and then they would offload it to a central place, and then you want somebody to look through it to look for something that's wrong. Right, you should have the drone, this fog computing, this edge computing, the drone self-diagnosing and saying, out of all the data I collected, something wasn't right. I'm a little nervous about that. Please take me out of service, right? And so that's the type of thing that we would do. And couple that then with some of the public data, like we could get from Chris's company, to say, if we had something going on with one of our drones, and then, we know there's law that is about to be passed, or we know there's a bid that we have a bid type of data, that makes me nervous now as a company, as a chief executive, to say, you know what, the data from the inside and the data from the outside are both telling me a story.
Chief Science Officer Avery Brown, 30 seconds. Tell me exactly what's going to happen in 5 years in the world of drones. Exactly.
Oh, we're down the path. Drones, remember, broad. Anything from an autonomous car to a flying vehicle to your delivery, all that's going to be automated. And you're going to be hands off. There's going to be a lot of thinking going on with drones by themselves.
Wow, I don't know if I'm scared of that or should put my feet up and not
you
worry about
that.
You saw
the movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah,
right?
I sure did. Chris Bach, okay, 30 seconds, exactly. This is a good one here. Exactly what's going to happen in the world of APIs in the next 5 minutes? No, the next 5 years.
Yeah,
this is a real joke here.
Yeah, I mean, data's not going away.
No.
And it's just going to continue to grow exponentially, and organizations are going to continue to wrestle with these challenges. And the key is coming up with effective strategies for managing how you're going to expose and leverage that data. And I think from a federal government perspective, they're going to continue to march forward and make that data available, because that's really the key to success.
Joel Benj from Emergent. I mean, you're the guy doing predictive analytics. When you predict 5 years out, this is going to be really accurate. It's like, put your money on that. Call up Las Vegas, put the money whenever Joel says so. I hate to even say this anymore. 5 years from now, what's going to happen to your company? Where are you going to be, and what's going to happen? It's this whole prediction.
Well, so a lot of people say that artificial intelligence is going to, you know, replace human beings. It's not. It's not going to ever take the human out of the loop. It's going to just make us better and faster and more resilient. But you got to think about all these technologies that we're dealing with. We're in the infancy stages. When the Wright brothers flew, the very first flight was like 12 seconds, right? And a couple months ago, I flew to Switzerland, in less than 12 hours. Mm-hmm. So we're only scratching the surface. We can't even imagine how fast and great things are going to be.
I think we just scratched the surface of this discussion today. I'd like to thank all three guests we had on the show today. We had Avery Brown, Director of Business Development for Air Space Management, Chris Bach, Chief Operating Officer from 540, and Joel Benj, Risk Evangelist from Emergent. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.